My name's Tammy and I'm an addict. Woo, this room got filled up. When I first walked in here, it wasn't that many people. Now they're just like steady coming. I want to thank this area for inviting me down here to share my experience, strength, and hope. It's always an honor and a pleasure to be asked to come and share my experience, strength, and hope, because where I came from, I was never invited anywhere. I was always asked to leave. So I get very emotional, very grateful, and and very nervous. Recovery and relapse. I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous back in 1994, and I remember it was the World Convention in Baltimore, and like I had 30 days clean and was down at the convention, and that's where the seed was planted for me. And I would come around here, and I would stay here for like 30 days, 60 days, and I would always come in here and sit on the back rows and look around for Mr. Wright and, the God of my understanding. And because I heard that I had to get one. And for me, a man was always the God of my understanding. That was my first drug. And so I would come in here and do that, and then I would pick the speaker apart and, get that sponsor that, would co-sign all my stuff and all that stuff. And I would go out and use. And I would always say, I relapsed. I didn't relapse. I used. I couldn't have relapsed because I never had any recovery. I never came in here and worked the program. I did it Tammy's way. I did the same things that I was doing before I got here. The only difference was that I wasn't using. That I wasn't using. I was still tricking. I was still lying. I was still stealing. I was still doing whatever I had to do to just survive because I thought recovery was an outside thing. I thought recovery was about how much gold I had on, the designer jeans, the diamonds, where I lived, and all that. Boy, was I confused. But I lived that way for a long time because I couldn't get what it says in our literature. We read it every meeting we go to. Three things that are indispensable are honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. I had none of them. I came in here and I would stay here with claws because I wanted to use on a daily basis and was too afraid to tell anybody because I thought there was something wrong with me. Why do I still want to use when I know there's a better way? They're going to think I'm crazy if I tell them. Just to qualify myself a little bit for the newcomer, my pain was so great when I came here. The hole was so big. I came from the streets of Baltimore City. I lived in abandoned houses, not at the end of the road, but for like the last 5 years of my using. I shot dope on a daily basis, all day. I did whatever I could put in me just not to feel, just not to look at what I was doing to my life. I believed that lie, once a junkie, always a junkie. That's what they told me I was going to grow up to be as a little girl. Seeing my aunt selling methadone saying, oh, I want to do that. Not even knowing. When I came here, I had 5 children by the time I was 19 years old. Trying to fill that hole, trying to fill that void, thinking this one's going to be different. This one will make him stay. This one will make him love me more. Hadn't got to the drugs yet. Just a little bit here and there, And it was like abandonment was a big part of my story. As a little girl, I was always tossed around from house to house, person to person, whoever would take me, that's where I went. You know, so I had a lot of stuff to recover from when I got here. But I just didn't know how to ask for the help. I thought it was a big game. And I kept coming in and out, lost the children. You know, tried marriage one time, lost that, got the house, lost that. You know, if I would have sat and, like, looked at my story, I had things in when I was in active addiction in the early years. They didn't keep me clean. They didn't make me happy. I was dead on the inside. I hated how I felt. I prostituted myself on a daily basis. I put poison in me on a daily basis. How could I feel good? And like, I created so much chaos. I lost all the kids. I had men that beat me. I thought that equaled love. You know, the more you beat me, the more you tell me what I can and can't do, the more you love me. I thought that equaled love. I was so confused. And I brought all that into Narcotics Anonymous with me back in 1994. And I came in here and I dressed up and I put that mask on and I could look good and smell good. And I could make you all think that I was recovering. Because I was writing some steps. I had a sponsor. But I forgot the crucial point. Working the steps. Applying them in my life. Getting honest. Getting open-minded. I'll do that, but I'm not doing that. That was my thing. If it felt good, you know, all right, I'll do that. Yeah, okay. 90-90, I ain't got time for that. No, no. Always going against the grain. And like, so I remember when I came here this time in 2002, my ass was beaten. You know, when I came to Narcotics Anonymous in 2002, I was 35 years old, and I didn't even know that 695 went around Baltimore. I didn't. My husband used to tell me, just get on 695. What's that? What do you mean I can't get lost? It goes in a circle. I was so confused. yeah, because, like, I lived in an eight-block radius. Ways and means to get more and where to get it. You know, and that's where I went for six blocks, eight blocks. I didn't go west side, east side, none of that. I just stayed in that radius and I was zoned in. Look, I didn't even see color anymore. Everything was black and white, just gray. I was so dead inside, just so pained up. I hated who I had become. Hated her. And when I finally made a decision to come here and work the Narcotics Anonymous program, my kids were grown. They were like in their, my youngest was in her, like 19, well, my youngest was real young, but I haven't seen her in a long time, and that's a whole nother story. But I had three kids that I talked to, and the oldest was like 25, and then it was 24 and like 19. So them promises, you know, that I kept telling them every time I came around here, every time I get 30 days clean and want to play mommy of the year, call my kids up. Your mother's got 30 days. Don't you want to see me? They'd be like, sure, in the beginning. Take them out with the trick. Let them buy them some things. Oh, that's right. When I come in to Narcotics Anonymous, they're no longer tricks. They're my friends. They want to help me. Yeah. Meanwhile, the hole's getting bigger because I don't like who I am when I lay down at night. I don't like the way it makes me feel when I got to lay up next to somebody to get ways and means to get more. And they don't have nothing to do about the drug anymore. It's the shame and the guilt that was eating me up inside. So in 2002, when I came around here, I got my ass busy because I come crawling up here. Because the $100 tricks turned to $10 tricks. I sat in the bathroom for 2 hours just praying to God to please let me get a vein so I can stop getting ill on myself. That was where my end was. And that still wasn't a bottom enough for me. Still continued on and on and on. So in 2002, when I came in here and I got my butt on the front row, and I started working with a sponsor, and it wasn't about the sponsor that went to the dances, not to say that there's anything wrong with that, because I'm a sponsor today and I love to dance, but I was looking for the person that was as sick as I was, because I didn't have the ability or the self-esteem to believe that anybody that was staying clean and had a new way of life would help me. I was just too mean of a person, too bad of a person. And so then I came in here and I started working with my sponsor, started getting into some step work, started feeling good, looking good, got the job, kids started coming back, working on the inside, letting people in my life to show me how to live. I didn't rush right into getting my kids. I didn't overfill my plate. I did some things first. I let you women teach me how to be a mother. And I just started working, you know, doing some things around here. And it's been tough because, I have 5 children that I have to build a relationship with. And some days I don't know how to do that. And I have to ask you all for help. But some days I don't want to because I think I'm all that. And I should have it going on. And that's where the relapse starts. I'm not talking about a relapse where at the end it's been a drug, because that ain't been my experience, but I have had relapses in my program. And it talks about it in recovery and relapse in our basic texts. When we stop calling our sponsor, when we stop going to meetings, our program stops. And I've had that experience around here. I've been on the pink clouds, you know. I have a really good life. I've started healing that hole inside with the steps, getting to know who Tammy really was and who she is today. Look, I came in here, I had cornrows in my hair, I had 2 teeth in my mouth, I had baggy pants on, I didn't know if I was white, black, purple, green, I didn't know if I wanted to be with a man or with a woman, because I was just whatever anybody told me I had to be to fit in. I lost Tammy in them years of using. I couldn't even make eye contact in a mirror. Couldn't make it. But I came around here and I faked it till I made it, and I let you women love me. Because I always came around here and got with the men. Always. You women can't help me. Just can't teach me nothing. You want something from me, and I ain't got shit. But in my mind, you want something from me. Get away. That's just not for me. It wasn't until I finally surrendered and made a decision to allow you to love me, to allow you to be in my life. I finally started working with my kids. My kids allowed me back in their life. I had such a resentment towards my mother, couldn't stand her. You know, I hate to use that word hate, but that's how I felt. And in recovery and relapse, it talks about resentments. Resentments will kill us. Resentments will take us back out that door. See, I finally, when I got back here this time, someone told me, no, don't go to steps. I want you to go in recovery and relapse and read it, because that helps us to see what we're not doing. Not what we need to do, but what we're not doing as well. And the resentments that I've gotten around this program, because even having 7 years clean, I've had tons of resentments, and it ain't about when I was using. Losing the compassion for the addict who still suffers will take me out of these rooms. When I'm sitting in here pointing a finger at you and talking about you over there and what you ain't doing and what you need to do, if focus is off me. I'm in relapse mode. Because there's only two things. You're either in recovery or you're in relapse. There ain't no in-between for me. There ain't no vacation. It talks about it. Recovery must come first. As soon as I put that job in front of my recovery, as soon as I put that vacation in front of my recovery, as soon as I put that man in front of my recovery, as soon as I put my kids in front of my recovery, I'm going to use. It ain't no when or if. I'm going to use. This addict will use. That's been my experience. And I'm scared to death. Scared to death to use. I keep my story real raw and up front because I don't ever want to forget that pain. I can remember coming out of Baltimore City Jail and like headed to the recovery house because I had to go and stay at a recovery house because I had no place to go. Told you abandoned buildings was at the end of my road. And I looked around and I was like, damn, look how green them trees are. Because now I got about 2.5 months clean. I was like in amazement. Talking about some spiritual awakenings around here, man. My spirit just comes alive. And that's what tells me when I'm in relapse mode. When I'm getting angry. You know, I had a sponsee a couple weeks ago pull me up. Imagine that. That's why our sponsorship's a two-way street. Because I can get caught up. I have a very, very loving and caring sponsorship in our area. Us women, we just love one another, and we like to hang out, and we like to do things. And we have people from one day to 20-some years, and we just all come together, and we love each other to life. But sometimes we get caught up, and we act out. And my sponsee came to me, and she said, you know, where's my sponsor at? I said, what are you talking about? I'm right here. She's like, no, I'm talking about that loving, caring woman that I know. That, like, walks with some integrity and, you know, always smiling and grinning and hugging and stuff. I said, I'm still right here. She's like, no, here lately you've been angry and every other word is F out your mouth. I had to take a look at that. At first I got angry. Like, who the hell you think you are? I was like, shit, tell me. But then recovery stepped in. And recovery said, you need to take a look at that. And I had to call her and I said, you know what, I'm really grateful that you were able to pull me up on that because that's not who I want to be. But see, I go through things around here and I get angry and I get resentful. And that's when I know when my spirit tells me when I'm around here cussing and carrying on talking about how I'll whip your ass and you don't know where I came from and I'll do this and I'll do that. That's the girl who walked in the door 7 years ago. I can convert back to that any minute of the day. Relapse. Because if I do act out on that, I'm going to end up in jail. I'm going to end up somewhere where I don't want to be. And then my ego is going to step in and tell me I can't face you all. And I need to stop going to them meetings. And I need to stop talking to them over there. Matter of fact, go to another area where they don't know you. That's how my disease talks to me. You know, a few years ago, me and my husband, because I've gotten a husband around here, and one that don't beat me or disrespect me, which I love to death. And a couple years ago, we had an opportunity to start our own business with a friend of ours in Narcotics Anonymous. And, you know, we're all sick. Don't think just because we're working some 12 steps and in this program that your ass can't get burnt. But see, I put people up here. I forget. We're human. We falter. That's why we got to keep coming back. And when that man, when we moved out of our house and moved up to the Reisterstown area and up in that area, they got maybe 10 meetings a week. And I'm used to like 500 a week in my area. And I was working 12 hours a day, didn't have time to go to meetings, didn't have time to call my sponsor. Matter of fact, she told me she was coming up here to visit me. She ain't come yet. She needs to call me, and I ain't calling her. Resentment. And wasn't sponsoring anybody, wasn't giving it back. I was in relapse. I was in an emotional relapse. And this woman that I had to work with that was supposed to be training us and all, every day I wanted to kill her. Every day. She just don't know. She don't know who I am. And my spirit was like, I was all knotted up. All knotted up. And I found myself sitting on a parking lot crying on the phone with my sponsor. I can't do this anymore. I want to leave. I want to run. Because see, it's a while before we get to the drug. It's got to first get us isolated. And I was isolated. And then it's got to tell us that nobody cares. And then it gets us angry and resentful. And what do I do best when I feel? I run. Then when I run, I pick up. Because where am I running to but back to the old people, places, and things? So, like, I was crying, and she told me, she was like, you really need to get to a meeting. You got to pray. And I was praying and praying, and I was like, God, please help me. I can't do this. I'm tired of working. I'm tired of this, and I'm tired of being up here all alone. I don't have any friends, blah, blah, blah. 2 weeks later, I was fired. Yep, lost that job. And we were supposed to be in partnership. Not only did I lose my job, my husband lost his, my son was working with us, we had a family restaurant, and one day we went and they said, you know what, we decided we don't want you guys. And we had nothing in writing because it was our NA friend, you know. That was a learning experience. So now, long story short, my house is in jeopardy. I'm going to lose it. We don't have no job. And by the way, I walked away from a very, very good job before I went here. Just walked away like it was nothing, right? I'm talking about a girl who's got a sixth grade education that didn't even know how to turn a computer on when she got here. And through letting you all love me and asking for your help, I started running companies, right? Lost my gratitude. Oh, no, I want to do this over here. You know, I'm going to go over here, you know. And so when we lost that job, I couldn't see the blessing in that God was removing from me what was keeping me away from my recovery. I couldn't see that. All I could see was the anger. I'm going to kill them. They just don't know. How can they do this? And I walked around here so angry and so resentful and just so miserable. And they were going on with their life, you know. So I ended up coming to peace with that. And when I go to my God and I turn it over and I let it go, it's just a peaceful feeling that happens. When I stop trying to control, when I get out of fear, whenever I'm in fear, angry, resentful, I'm in relapse. I'm in an emotional relapse. And what this program has taught me is that you pick up the phone, you call your sponsor, you get your ass to a meeting, and you start writing and journaling and find out the exact nature of what's going on the inside. I was just told I got about 5 more minutes, so I wanted to read something to you. Whenever I'm asked to do a convention or a workshop or anything, and it's a topic, I like to go to our literature and find something that I can identify with. And in recovery and relapse, it says, if we begin to avoid new responsibilities, by missing meetings, neglecting 12-step work, or not getting involved, our program stops. These are the kind of things that lead to relapse. We may sense a change coming over us. Our ability to remain open-minded disappears. We may become angry, resentful towards anyone or anything. We may begin to reject those who were close to us. We isolate ourselves. We become sick of ourselves in a short time. We revert back to our sickest behavior patterns without even having to use a drug. That stood out to me because I've had that in my recovery. Please, if you're around here and you're pointing fingers or you're angry or you're resentful, don't let it take you out of here. Get to work. Get to stepping. Get a sponsor. Get to meetings. Give yourself a break. I have been all over this country since I have been clean. Look, I have all my kids back. All five of them I talk to now. I got six grandchildren. I'm a productive member of society. I help the newcomer. I have compassion for that newcomer walking in the door. I don't care how many times they walk through it. Welcome them, because it could be you. I'm Tammy, and I'll keep coming back.
You've got a new sign.
I'd like to introduce our second speaker, John from Pocono Mountain, Pennsylvania.
I'm an addict. My name's John. Hi. I'm going to take off my hat. I took off all my other shit over here. My phone was ringing, by the way. That was me. I'm looking around the room going, whose fucking phone's ringing? And she did a great job, man. I'll tell you that. She was telling me how nervous she was before she got up here. And I, you know, like, I'm always anxious before I get up here. And I just believe that it's just tough for us to stand up in front of a room full of people, especially at a convention, because one of the things I've learned is that you come here, you pay money, right, to get into this place. You don't want to hear somebody's going to make you fall fucking asleep, right? So, you know, like, there's some expectation there that when you come to a meeting, you're going to hear something that you like, and, you know, I don't have any control over your expectations, but I'm going to do my best. You know, I'm going to do what I told this young lady to do. I forgot your name already. I'm good.
Tammy.
I used for a long time. The fact that I can even stand up is a miracle. And, I told Tammy, just be yourself. You know what I mean? That was what my first sponsor always told me. Just get up there and be you and be honest and share your experience. And, you know, that's what I do today. First, I want to thank everybody who came before me in Narcotics Anonymous who helped keep these doors open. I'm feeling really emotional today. And listening to her got me more emotional. Thanks a freaking lot. And I want to thank everybody who's come after me in Narcotics Anonymous. And I want to thank everybody who hasn't come after me since I've been in Narcotics Anonymous. And all the people that never caught up to me, who I thought were coming after me before I came to Narcotics Anonymous. Did everybody have a couple or two or three people that were following that weren't really there before they got here? I had a whole freaking entourage that was there. I didn't even, you know. But I came to Narcotics Anonymous in 1983. And I'll share a little bit about my experience beforehand. I used drugs until I couldn't use drugs anymore. Then I used drugs a while longer just to make sure they stopped working. Then I continued to use them just to be extra freaking careful. And when I finally was convinced that I couldn't use drugs anymore, I surrendered to the program of Narcotics Anonymous. That was when I stopped. And I started using drugs when I was 8 years old, and I was sharing about this. Yeah, somebody said, wow. Well, you know what? I'm 51 years old. Thank God and Narcotics Anonymous for that, because there were people saying, you ain't going to make it to 25. You know what I mean? And the way I was going, I shouldn't have made it to 21, okay? Forget about 25. And, you know, now see, there goes the 51. I forgot what I was saying. And because of the steps, I'm okay with it. But anyway, I started using when I was 8. I'm a product of the 60s and the 70s. Okay? There's a lot of people nodding their heads, 60s and the 70s. You smoked cigarettes when you were a kid in the 60s, it was no big deal. You know, it was kind of funny. Ah, he's smoking. You know what I mean? When I was a baby and I was crying, they used to take this shit called Paragoric and rub it on my gums so that I would go to sleep. Does anybody know what Paragoric is? It's alcohol and opium mixed together. It was before I even had fucking teeth. They're putting this shit on my gums. Then, when they didn't have Paragoric, they put whiskey on your gums. So I acquired a taste for drugs a long time before I ever picked up a drug. And I had breakfast with some guys that are very close to my heart this morning before we came up here, and I said, you know, it says in our literature that drugs are the most obvious symptom of the disease of addiction, but it does not say it's the worst symptom. Because there are primary addictions, there are secondary addictions, there are the shit that really floats your boat, and then there's the shit that sends your ass into outer space. You know what I mean? And, you know, I think a lot of the shame and the guilt that I have when I was using drugs was around the shit that sent me into outer space, and the drugs just kept my boat floating, if you know what I mean. And I used drugs for 25 years. I was in an explosion in an oil refinery when I was 20 years old, and I was almost burned to death. I had 35 surgeries in the first 3 months that I was there. I had my last rites 7 times. I was blind. I couldn't walk, I couldn't talk, I couldn't hear. You know, I was reduced to being an infant again at 20 years old. I was completely dependent on my family to take care of me and other people, and it was a really humiliated, demeaning experience, and it really felt like it took a part of my humanity away. But it also saved my life. Saved my life. It was the worst day of my life, October 5th, 1979, and the best day of my life, all in one. Because sometimes, it talks about this in recovery and relapse, we need a nuclear explosion to wake our asses up. I didn't get the nuclear explosion, but, you know, a pipeline exploded with crude oil in it, and I was covered in hot crude oil, and I burst in the flames. And I'm here today to talk about it. That's the good news. A little self-conscious, I guess, about my haircut. That's one of my defense mechanisms. I joke around when I start feeling my feelings. She said, when I start feeling my feelings, I run, I joke around. But I'm so grateful to be alive and to be clean today. And really, every breath that I take, I owe to Narcotics Anonymous. That's for real, okay? Because when I left that burn unit, the surgeon there told my family that your son is a drug addict. We made him a drug addict, and he's going to be a drug addict the rest of his life. He told my family that there's no pain worse than being burned. None. The thing that comes the closest to it, ladies, is giving birth to a child. The burns are supposedly more painful than that. I've never given birth. I'm thinking it's a lot of, like, trying to take a shit when you're on methadone, but I've never given birth. I had to go there. Some of you know how hard that is to do. That's hard. Anyway, I came out of that Fern unit, and I was the most dangerous drug addict I ever met in my whole life. You know why? Because I had a legitimate reason to use drugs. And ain't a nothing worse than a drug addict with a legitimate reason to use drugs. In 1983, I was on like my 50th surgery. I've had 75. And my tolerance to narcotics had gotten to the point, because I was abusing the drugs that the doctors were giving me, and I was buying drugs on the street, because I started out on the street, and the drugs from the pharmacy just added to what I already knew, and that shit's good coming out of the pharmacy, all right? You know, pharmaceutical shit, you know, forget about it. They don't put no cut on that stuff. They don't. You know, and if they were, you know, I didn't know about it, but, you know, I was hooked in a way that I didn't, you know, I can't even fathom, you know, but I was waking up when they were doing surgery on me. That's where my tolerance was with narcotics. They would put me under anesthesia, and while they were operating on me, I would come to. Yeah. And they decided to send me to a rehabilitation hospital in Pennsylvania in 1983. It was a mental ward. And through the grace of God, and because there were a few members around on the East Coast back then, I walked into my very first NA meeting in October of 1983 at the age of 24 years old. And I can't tell you how rare a thing that was back in 1983 to do on the East Coast. They didn't put my ass in AA. They sent my ass right to NA. Right to NA. They knew I was fucked up. And you know what they do with you when you leave those facilities, because the facilities aren't recovery, they're treatment, right? They don't treat addiction, they treat the symptoms of addiction. They throw us out on the street and they say, go to this meeting and this fellowship and that. They think the more we go to, the better off we're going to be. So I ended up going to an AA meeting when I got out of there. And I'm really grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous, because I went in there and I identified myself as, I don't know what I was identifying myself as. I don't even remember, you know, I mean, you know. Heroin addict, cocaine junkie, something. I didn't know. I didn't know. Because when you knew, you don't know. And this old timer in AA walked up to me and he said, boy, you're in the wrong place. And I thank God for that guy, because you know what? He was right. I was in the wrong place. You know, I was in the wrong place. Not because there's anything wrong with that fellowship, but their message isn't sufficient for me. Okay, there's an awful lot of addicts that hide out in other fellowships and dope fiend and get clean dates from one thing and they're still doing another. And I've had people tell me, I'll give them a coin as long as they ain't doing this. They're okay in my book. Killing us. Killing us. You know, and the thing that I know about recovery and relapse is this. I have the same experience as Tammy. I don't believe that I was ever in recovery before now, so I don't believe that technically I've ever relapsed. Though when I came in 1983, I was still having surgery. They would detox me and send me back to the hospital and do surgery on me. So I would go to meetings, and then they'd put me back in the hospital, and I'd get re-addicted to morphine again, and then they'd put me back on the street, and I'd use again. And I'd bounce in and out of the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous from 1983 to 1996. And I ended up living in an abandoned building on methadone maintenance in North Camden, New Jersey, which has the prestige of being the most dangerous city in the United States. more murders per capita in Camden, New Jersey than any other place in the country. I was the only white guy in North Camden. I was proud of it. I was crazy. Why are we so proud that we're crazy? I don't get that. You know, I thought that meant something. It meant I was nuts. That's what it meant. You know, and we were having this talk the other day about, like, how we can become spiritual elitists in Narcotics Anonymous. We can forget what it was like when we were new, and we expect people coming in here who are new to know what they're supposed to do. Come on. Well, I was an elitist when I was using drugs. You guys were too. You know? Because I lived with a Puerto Rican dude named Baby, and there was another Dominican dude named Chama, and Baby and I were snorting dope, and Chama was shooting dope. He was a piece of shit. Dude's fucked up. He's shooting dope. Davey was my street sponsor, by the way. I would go to the methadone maintenance clinic every morning, and Baby would say, "Bro, you got to give that methadone up, man. That shit's going to kill you. Just shoot dope and you'll be okay." This is the shit that I learned on the street, right? I mean, you know. And when I had enough of that, when I was tired, when I was desperate, and when I was hopeless, and really when I was convinced that I could no longer live like that, I finally surrendered to the program of Narcotics Anonymous. I finally came in here and I did all those things. Listen, nothing changed in Narcotics Anonymous as far as what we were giving people, the 12 steps and the 12 traditions, between 1983 and 1996. Our fellowship and this program evolved, and we got a lot more new literature. There was no basic text when I got clean in 83. There was no nothing almost, okay? But they were giving out the same suggestions in 1983 that they were giving out in 1996. I just wasn't willing to take them. And when I came back in 1996, I was wearing a pair of gym shorts from 1963. Listen, you can't make this shit up. I ain't shitting you. Right? And I weighed about 100 pounds. I'm almost 6 foot tall, 5 feet 11 and a half. Right? I weighed 100 pounds. My waist was 28 inches. And I went to a meeting and I was holding on to my chair like only a dying person can hold on to their seat. And I put up my hand and I said, "I need help." And I was ready. I was ready to receive. My ass was receptive. Look up the word open-minded. It's about being receptive. Right? And if you're not receptive, you cannot have recovery. Yes. Tammy talked about honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. I came in here with a ton of willingness. You know what my willingness was born out of? Sheer fucking desperation. That was the vehicle that brought my ass to Narcotics Anonymous. I didn't know what else to do. But I knew where to go because somebody dropped a message on me in 1983. And if you think it's hell being in active addiction before you get here, come here, hear the message, go back out. That's hell. Because the first time you was in hell, you didn't have the key. Now you're going back to hell, you got the key, and you're bitching about you're in hell. And you got the key. And you chose to go back to hell. And that's hell. And I came back in here, and I got a sponsor. And I remember at that first meeting, a guy walked up to me, and he said, "What are you willing to do to stay clean?" Of course, I knew what he wanted to hear, so I said, "Anything." And he said, "We'll see." And you know what? We'll be seeing until I go to the grave. Because willingness Third step says there is no such thing as unconditional willingness. It's something that increases, like all the other principles in the 12 Steps of Narcotics Anonymous. It increases. And I don't manufacture any of this stuff. It comes from Narcotics Anonymous and the spirituality that I've received through the 12 Steps of Narcotics Anonymous. It comes from prayer and meditation and going to meetings and helping other people. It comes from doing all the things that I didn't do between 1983 and 1996. But I got that sponsor and we went to a halfway house where I was living and we were talking and he said, we were sitting there talking and I told a human being, another human being, for the first time, how I felt about my appearance. Because my appearance kept me out there from 1983 to 1996. I said, I feel like a monster. People laugh at me. They point at me. And he looked at me and he said, it doesn't matter what you look like. Recovery is an inside job. Don't ever forget this. Okay? One sentence that another addict said changed my life. Nobody. I didn't hear that before 1996. Nobody ever said that to me. It changed my life immediately. I knew that I could recover too because I had an inside just like everybody else. I had an inside just like everybody else. You know, and it made me want to keep coming back. It made me want to jump into the step work. It made me want to be a part of this thing called Narcotics Anonymous. It made me want to help other people. You know, and I believe that a relapse looks like the opposite of recovery. That's what I believe it looks like. You know, so the first thing I do when somebody asked me to sponsor him, I said, okay, look up the word recovery in the dictionary. Because listen, if you want to do something and you don't know what it is you want to do, you can't do shit. If you go to the airport and say, I want to go someplace warm, your ass might end up anywhere. You need to have a destination. There is none in recovery. That's the tricky part. There is no destination, right? But we're shooting for recovery. So I have them look up the word recovery in the dictionary. And then I tell them to find it in the basic text. Now, this takes a few months when they're new because they're going, recovery is what happens in our meetings. I'm going, nope. Recovery is, because it says it like 100 times, but there's only one definition of recovery in the basic text. Recovery is an active participation in changing ideas and attitudes. Along with that becomes a change in behavior. The first thing that I need to do is change my behavior. You can't think your way into a better way of living, but you can act your way into a better way of living. The first thing I had to stop doing was stop using drugs. It was an action. When the compulsion ends, there's an opportunity for the obsession to leave. As long as the compulsion continues, the obsession will too. I had to stop. I had to get honest about me. I knew I was an addict for a long time. I just didn't believe that I could recover. It wasn't that I couldn't surrender. It was that I didn't believe that I was like you and that I could recover too. And that kept me out of here for a long time. And I tell you what, I've been coming to meetings for almost 27 years. I've worked the steps with a few people. My present sponsor is in the next meeting sharing on NA history, and I love him to death. My first sponsor died of lung cancer when I had 8 years clean. You know, and I had a guy in between those who I guess you would call a spiritual advisor take me through the step process. But in our literature, and I believe Tammy referred to it, or maybe the young lady in the last meeting I was in on anonymity, recovery is a choice. She said recovery must come first. Right? It's a choice. It's something I choose every day. If you don't consciously choose it every day, it ain't there. I must choose it every day. I started out, and listen, my wife has been clean 25 years. My daughter, 23 years old, she's coming up on 6 years clean. I'm coming up on 14, and that's for NA, right? Without you guys, without this thing, that's not possible. Are you flagging me yet? Okay, good. 10 minutes, thanks. Hey, listen, I thought it was somebody else's cell phone ringing, you know. A lot of things have happened to me in the last 13 years that I never believed possible. And through living this program and having a sponsor and going to meetings and being involved in service, my life has changed in a way that I just never... It's a miracle every day. You know, back in the day, they used to say, don't leave before the miracle happens. Miracle happens every day. My life depends on a miracle happening every single day. Think about that. Because every day I wake up, listen, don't believe that bullshit that using's not an option. Who the fuck made that up? Listen, you know how, you know, listen, don't get me started. Alex, stop laughing. Do you know how much that devalues the choice that I make every day? That you guys make every day? Do you know how much that demeans the choice that everybody in this program makes every day to do the hard work that we do? You're telling me that that's not an option? Bullshit. It's always an option. As a matter of fact, it's in the top 10. Yeah, it goes something like this. Use drugs? No. Use drugs? No. Use drugs? No. You know, it's there. Because that's what addicts do. We use. We use. Not because we're evil. Not because we're mean, not because we're bad, because we're sick. We suffer from obsession and compulsion. That's what addiction is. My mind is like a blender. Whatever you throw in there, right? You throw something in there and it's good, chances are it's going to be mixed up again. You throw something in there and it's bad, that might be mixed up again too. Because it's kind of like when you was using and you couldn't get what you wanted and you go, okay, well, what do you have? You know what I mean? You start out looking for this and they go, well, I got some Darvocet. Darvocet. Okay. I can't believe I ever paid for those fucking things. But I was using drugs. I had an excuse. But you know, so many miracles have happened in my recovery. She was talking about her children. When I had 5 years clean, I got custody of my daughters. You know what I mean? I got custody of my daughters. I thought I was going to lose my mind. They were 12 and 14 years old. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, watch what you pray for. My sponsor warned me. He said, someday somebody, she's just going to drop those kids off on your step. And it happened. And because of Narcotics Anonymous, my one daughter's in college now, and she's got a good job, and people love her. The people that know her really love her. She's a good kid. And the other one, like I said, it's coming up on 6 years clean. I got a grandson. That's her boy. He's 2.5 years old. Light of my life. I never knew how special it was to be a grandparent until I actually was one. My mom kept telling me that. And if it wasn't for this program and me being clean, those two young ladies would have had a very different fate. So when God saves your ass in Narcotics Anonymous, you never know who else's ass he's saving along with yours. And I'll wrap it up. 5 minutes I got here, okay? This is the thing that I tell the guys that I sponsor. And if you're new, please hear me. When we come into Narcotics Anonymous, hopefully we're in that state of desperation that I described. Desperation is a lot like being on fire. And I know about that. When the fire goes out, we forget that we were ever burning. It ain't amnesia. People said, I have amnesia. No, you don't. It's called denial. Denial, I love the dictionary. Denial is an unconscious defense mechanism marked by a refusal to accept, that means look at reality, painful thoughts, feelings, and realities. That's what denial is. And the person that comes into Narcotics Anonymous and doesn't change their ideas is stuck with their old ideas, and there's only one place your old ideas can take you. Back out there. You know, Tony D from New York City used to say, when you're going nowhere, any road will take you there. Any road will take you there. You know, and you can sit in a meeting, newcomer or old timer, because there's people in here, they come in, and the chapter Recovery and Relapse says some people think the recovery is, you know, a matter of a mere abstinence. It's not. Abstinence is the gateway to recovery. You can't have recovery without abstinence, but you can have abstinence without recovery. It does not happen by magic. It's something you need to work for. There are two words that we hate worse than any other words. One is work and one is time. You're going to have to do some work. This is going to take some time. What the fuck? You know. So I say that to tell you that if you're new in this program, dive in with both feet like you did the first time you got high. Dive in. Because it may be the only chance you ever get to do it. Because there's plenty of people that have come to Narcotics Anonymous and did what I did, and they walked back out and they ain't ever coming back. For whatever reason. They're dead. They're too ashamed. They're in prison. Whatever it is. I do believe it's possible to pass the point of no return out there. I do. I've seen people do it. Okay? And I'll say this in close. The other thing about doing that work is you never know what tomorrow is going to bring. You don't. And if you're not prepared for the shit storm that might ensue, it might blow your ass right back out the door again. January of this year, 2010. January 2nd, to be exact, I got a phone call that my 46-year-old little brother, I've got eight brothers and sisters, or I had died in his sleep of heart disease, 46 years old. And it took every ounce of courage and every fiber of recovery that I had to go down and sit with my mother and father. And it took every ounce of courage and every fiber of recovery that I had to attend his funeral and watch my 83-year-old father and my 84-year-old mother bury one of their children. It broke my heart. And I'm so grateful that I was clean and I was able to be there to give back to them. My father quit his job and became my personal nurse after I got burnt. He was a bricklayer. And he became my personal attendant. He saved my life. It broke my heart to watch that. But I went anyway, because I don't run from pain all the time anymore. Recovery has taught me to face night fears if I want to recover, not run. And that ain't easy to do, man. That is not easy to do. I give you a lot of credit if you do that. 3 weeks later, the phone rang again. My mother died. Three weeks later, we're standing in the same funeral parlor again. Only this time, I'm watching my dad bury his wife of 61 years. You just don't know what's going to happen. So you got to be prepared. If you don't take the steps, you're not going to be prepared. There's only one wrong way to work this program. One. Alone. Every other way will work. Because we vary in degrees of sickness and rate of recovery. We all get our learning curve in here. So do it however it works for you, but do it together with us. Thanks for letting me share.